gave up false identification with the body full of ignorance. In his original position of eternal servitorship, he engaged himself in rendering service to the Lord. For when one actually becomes purely Krishna conscious, no one has any right to rule over him. Important here. When one actually becomes purely Krishna conscious, no one has any right to rule over him. When situated in Krishna consciousness, one is no longer in the darkness of ignorance, and when freed from all such darkness, one is situated in his original position. Jivera Swarupai Krishna Nityadas. The living entity is eternally the servant of the Lord, and thus when he engages himself in the service of the Lord, in all respects, he enjoys the perfection of life. Om Ajnata Mirandasya Agnanjana Salakaya Shakshuru Militan Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitan Jena Bhuttale Svayam Rupakaram Vindirati Svapadantikam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dino Bhando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Krishavana Siddhi Devi Pranamani Haripaya Pancha Kalpataruvyascha Krupa Sindhu Vyayivacha Patitanam Pavanavyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadadhara Siva Sri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Iti vyavasita buddhya narayana grihittaya hitanya pavan agyanam tattasram tabamasitaha. So in this verse, the story is continued, the story of Maharaj Katunga. It's pretty much the ending of the story here. Maharaj Katunga was descendant of another, we read the previous story, Maharaj Sodas. Sodas Maharaj, whom he was cursed by Vasishta. And to become a meat eater, a man eater. He became a Rakshasa. For whatever reason, there's the story there. And the important topic here is that Prabhupada is pointing out in his purport that when one becomes pure in Krishna consciousness, one can no longer be ruled. And this is very interesting if you follow the two stories, the story of King Sodas and the story of King Katunga. In the story of King Sodas, he, impelled by his curse, by the curse received from Vasishta, that he was going to be a Rakshasa. There is that incident in which he had to eat the Brahmana. He had to kill a Brahmana and eat his body. And as we know in the previous slokas, it so happened that this Brahmana was in the act of procreating with his wife, and his wife appealed again and again to the king not to kill her husband and you know, go on with the procreation. But the king, impelled completely under the control of the curse of this Muni, he actually killed the Brahmin and ate his corpse. So when that happens, the lady cursed him again. As we know, that the moment he was going to be engaged in progeny, in creative progeny with his wife, he would die. And so this story is related to Katwang Maharaj, because eventually Katwang Maharaj is a descendant from this dynasty of this king, Sodas. And we can see that giving protection to others is the paramount duty or function of kshatriyas, or kings, or heads of states. And so, in the case of Katanga Maharaj, as we know also a few previous verses, when he was blessed by the demigods, because remember he went to fight on behalf of the demigods, and because he was successful in his fights and he was victorious, the demigods wanted to bless him, but the king Katong Maharaj asked, you know, how long will I live? And the demigods, having a longer span of life, the time, they could tell, they could see that he was going to live only for a moment more. And so they told him, frankly, he said, well, you're just going to leave just one moment more. And so without any asking any benedictions, Katong Maharaj, he simply took off. He said, thank you very much, took off, and he completely absorbed himself in the practice of devotional service. And that's how we ended up with this sloka now. That Maharaj Katanga, even though he was just leaving for just a few moments, just a few minutes more, he dedicated himself to the practice of Krishna consciousness. And then again, Prabhupada is saying here, you know, this, the perfection of life is the perfection of life in Krishna consciousness. And in reality, in the material world, everyone is ruled over. Not only in the political sense, not only in the sense of, you know, having a president, having a prime minister or a king or a state, but also in many other ways. Narada Muni, for example, in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when he's instructing Maharaj Yudhisthira, at one point in time, Maharaj Yudhisthira, he had a routine. He had some sort of sadhana. Maharaj Yudhisthira used to get up, wash himself, and immediately after washing himself, bathing himself, he used to go straight to the quarters where the elderly members of the family were in the palace, and he used to pay obeisances to Kunti, Gandhari, and to Dhritarashtra. This is after the war. So that was his routine. That was his, before he even engaged in religious duties, right after washing himself, cleaning himself, went straight to pay obeisance to his superiors. And so one day, Maharaj Yudhisthira was on the way to pay obeisance to the superiors, and when he entered the chambers, he didn't see them. He didn't see Kunti, he didn't see Gandhari, he didn't see the Dhritarashtra, and they were all elderly by then. And so he was shocked. And, you know, you're talking a big palace here, the Pandavas, this big security. There's a lot of security around, you know. But suddenly they were not there. And so Justin Maharaj got very apprehended about the situation. And then he found out that actually Vidura had preached to them to give up the palace and go to the forest and just, you know, renounce the world. And they have done so. But it so happened that they all died in a forest fire, burned to the ashes. So when Yudhisthira got the news, he was so dejected and so depressed. So that's when Narada Muni shows up. He begins to preach to him. And one of the verses that Narada Muni quotes, or basically he composes, says, Kala karma guna adino deho yan panchabhautika. He says, Arjunastir, why are you lamenting about the things? The material body is already under the control of kala, karma, and gunas. Kala karma guna adino. Deho yam pancha bhautika, this material body which is composed of five elements, is already under the control of eternal time, fruitive activities, in under the control of the mode's material nature. Katanam jamstu gopayat sarpagrasto yataparam. And then Narada Muni goes on to give an analogy that he said, just like a prey already within the grasp of a serpent, of a snake, sarpa grasto means within the grasp of the snake, sarpa grasto yataparam, just like a mouse or a squirrel or whatever, it's already under the control of the snake, under the grasp of the snake. He said it's over. It's just a matter of time before the snake swallows the prey. So similarly, he said, this material body is already under the control of these three things. It's just a matter of time before the body dissolves. Now, Prabhupada here is speaking about not really the material body, but he's speaking about consciousness. So how can consciousness be ruled over, right? We can understand that the material body is being ruled over by so many things. Birth, old age, disease and death is pretty much standard philosophy in our Krishna conscious movement. We know that. So the material body is already subjected to the things. But what about consciousness? Well, Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita that pretty much the gunas have such a power that the gunas taints everything. Everything in the material universe, everyone in the material universe, whether at the gross level or at the subtle level, we are all under these influences of the three modes of nature. And Krishna also speaks, speaking to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, he said that this control is so perfect that the gunas even control what you eat, what you think, your thoughts, the level of intelligence, the quality of intelligence. It controls your feelings. It influences your emotions. It influences your desires. So way beyond the gross level of the body. And it's so strong, actually, that the gunas even control what kind of religion you're going to practice. Krishna and the Bhagavad Gita, there in the divisions of the faith, that chapter, Krishna says, Satthan Rupa Sarvasya Shraddha Bhavati Bharata. That even the type of faith that we have, even those things or those people or those ideas in which we're going to put our full faith, even that is controlled by the modes of nature. Satthan Rupa Sarvasya Shraddha Bhavati Bharata. Shraddha Mayo Yam Purusha Yo Yak Shraksha Saivasaha. So everything is under the control of the gunas, even to the type of everything we do. Generally speaking, we think that, or people think that, you know, because they have the choice of eating whatever they want, they are in control. But actually, that's not the case. The modes of nature are dictating pretty much their propensities. Or people think that we have freedom of religion in this country, right? But even that, Krishna says, is dictated by the modes of nature. Yet Prabhupada says in this purport, he opens the purport by saying that when one actually is in Krishna consciousness, in pure Krishna consciousness, then there's no more ruling over. Then the body, the gross body, the senses, the intelligence, the mind, the ego, all these things related to us is completely under the control of Krishna. And that is perfect freedom. That is absolute freedom. When Krishna is not in control directly, when Krishna is controlling us by way of his material energy, then we are said to be in bondage. And then we have to be ruled over by somebody. But when we are completely aware of Krishna, that's a Krishna consciousness, it simply means to be aware of Krishna. Krishna consciousness is not, it's a very factual situation of life. It's not something that is so mystically hidden or so far away, or, you know, because sometimes we have the tendency to think that, oh, you know, I'm in Maya, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. But actually, just like we feel that we are in Maya, when you feel you're in Krishna, it's as real as that. It's the feeling of reality. Just like when you're hearing beautiful sounds, or when you're smelling nice aromas, or when you're tasting great food, you feel it real. You feel that this perception is so real. But when you are in contact with Krishna, that reality is absolute. Actually, that's the real reality. Krishna explains that in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. That anything that we experience under the influence of the material energy is to be known as to be illusion. And anything that we experience under the influence of the spiritual energy, that's reality. Na sato vidyate bhavo na abhavo vidyate satoha. That's what Krishna said. He said that that which is unreal, there can be no endurance. Na asato vidyate bhavo. Asat means that which is not real, that which is illusion, Maya, basically. Na asato vidyate bhavo, na abhavo, and there is never cessation of existence. Vidyate sataha, of that which is eternal. So life in Krishna consciousness is reality. Life outside of Krishna consciousness, that is something else. Like Nagaraj Prabhu was saying yesterday that about magicians, you know, magicians have certain way of illusion the audience. And so Krishna is the great magician. He indirectly, Krishna, through his energies, he is bewildering everyone. And so in our bewilderment, we think that we have freedom of religion. In our bewilderment, we think we have freedom of the press, freedom of whatever, we want to eat whatever we want, freedom of movement, this and that, all these kinds of freedoms. We think we are free. But that's not real freedom. Liberation or mukti, that's real freedom. And so Prabhupada explains here that when one is in pure Krishna consciousness, then there's no more, you don't need to be ruled over, because you're already being directly ruled by Krishna. Being ruled by Krishna simply means being in a loving relationship with Krishna. If you could think about it, even in our ordinary life, the most prominent way of controlling someone is through love, isn't it? You can control people through force, but only for some amount of time before there is some kind of revolt or revolution or whatever. But when you control people by love, that control is absolute, pretty much. So in the material world, we are all being controlled by a perverted reflection of spiritual love. So that's why living entities, they always seek companionship, because they wanna be engaged in a loving relationship with someone else, with some other living entity. And so in that loving relationship is what binds them. That control is way more perfect than the control by force. Similarly, in the spiritual world, from which the true love comes from, that loving relationship with Krishna, that's complete control. Krishna is our beloved, and therefore the relationship is consummated. Just like in right now, we are all engaged in remembering Krishna. We are engaged in the practice of Krishna consciousness, so that one day we can enter into the pastimes of Krishna. That's really the aim here. The whole purpose of why we are engaged in Krishna consciousness is so that one day Krishna will accept us again in his lilas, and that is perfect freedom. And Prabhupada explains it here. He said that, he quotes Chaitanya Charitamrita, Jivara Sarup Hoy Krishna Nityas. Actually, this is spoken by Lord Chaitanya himself. So, in the achieving Krishna consciousness simply means achieve our own natural state of existence, in which our aim is simply to serve Krishna, to be around those who are serving Krishna, to be around those who love Krishna, to be around Krishna's devotees, to be engaged in something for the satisfaction of Krishna. Last night we were reading Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And Srila Rupa Goswami was explaining that the pure devotees of Krishna, they are so absorbed and so attached to the service of Krishna that even if they are given the opportunity to rule over the universe, they would pass it out. They say, no, thank you very much. They're just completely absorbed, completely engaged, completely relishing the relationship with Krishna through service, that they can even bypass all kinds of benedictions. Imagine the benediction of ruling over the universe. Just like right now, people are running for office in so many different ways in this country, right? And the country is preparing for some kind of elections. Everybody wants to win. They want to rule. Imagine you can rule the United States of America. Everybody's going nuts for that. And this is just one tiny country in a tiny little planet. Imagine if you can rule the whole universe. This is one of the reasons also why in the Srimad Bhagavatam we find so many different stories in which Indra himself is afraid of losing his post. Because there's a great material pleasure in actually ruling over others. Indra rules over the universe. He's the president of this universe. And just like any politician, he will do anything to keep his post. We have all the stories in the Bhagavatam of so many munis and yogis doing such great austerities for some other purpose. But in the mind of Indra, they say, this guy is doing austerity so that he can take my job. And so Indra arranges all kinds of traps for these yogis so they can break their vows. Like that. So even Indra, who is a devotee of Krishna also in a sense, even he is afraid of losing control. But yet the pure devotees, Rupa Goswami says, you can offer them this control over the whole entire creation and they'll just pass it. Say, no, thank you. I'm busy here. I'm busy here serving Krishna. So that is actually liberation. That is the most sublime state of existence. It's just like Prabhupada oftentimes gives us this analogy of the fish out of the water. Isn't it? We all heard that story so many times. But it's such a perfect analogy, actually. A fish cannot exist without water. just like we cannot exist without oxygen. We cannot exist without air. It's not, we cannot be happy or be just ourselves in a situation, in an environment or in, which is not our nature. So Jivira Swarup Hoy Krishna Nityadas means that when the living entity is engaged in the service of Krishna, that's when all these hankerings go away. All the troubles go away. And actually that's explained by Rupa Goswami also. He says that the first symptom of pure devotion is that your material pangs are gone. Now this is the way you can tell in your own life. This is the way you can tell. This is the way you can measure. It's a very concrete way of telling whether you're advancing in Krishna consciousness or not. It's whether the onslaughts of material existence are not disturbing you anymore. Now they'll be there. That's also explained by Srila Rupa Goswami. This misery of material life will come, but because the steadiness in consciousness of the pure devotee in serving Krishna, these disturbances no longer affect the pure devotee. So this is one way we can tell that when we are in the face of any calamity, and if we take it as a calamity, then that would create anxiety and disturbance. But if we don't, then that's a symptom that Krishna consciousness is already taking root in our lives. This is also explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explains that the symptom of a transcendentalist, the first symptom of a transcendentalist, is that he's no longer disturbed by profit and loss, happiness and unhappiness, victory or defeat, all these opposites, all these dualities. You know, because most people want to be profitable. They don't want to lose. Most people want to be happy. They don't want to be unhappy. Most people want to be victorious. They don't want to be losers. Like that. So, but yet, Krishna says, you know, if you don't bother with the things anymore, because they'll come and go. They will come and go. If you don't bother with them and you are busy in your duty of Krishna consciousness, that's really the aim. And therefore, Prabhupada says, the living entity is eternally a servant of the Lord, and thus he engages himself in the service of the Lord, and he enjoys the perfection of life. Now, of course, somebody might say, you know, I've been practicing Krishna consciousness 30, 40 years, and, you know, where's the taste? But Prabhupada is saying here, you enjoy perfection of life. Actually, this is also explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explains that, this is a very nice verse, Nahi Gyanina Sadrisham Bhavitram Mihavidyate. Krishna says that in this world, there's nothing more sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge of Krishna, knowledge of Krishna. Nahi gyanena sadrisham pavitram mihavidyate tat svayam yoga santidha. And one who has become accomplished in the practice of Krishna consciousness, yoga santidha means perfection of yoga, but Krishna is meaning perfection of bhakti yoga. Kalena atmanivindati. That in due course of time, kalina means in due course of time, atmani vindati, within yourself, you will enjoy this blissful life of Krishna consciousness. In other words, one of the beauties of Krishna consciousness is not, this is not something that I can chew and give it to you, or you can chew and give it to me. You have to chew it yourself. And then when you chew it, you digest it, then you feel it. Atmani means within you. Krishna said, within yourself, you'll start relishing this thing. You're enjoying this perfection of life. And that's what Prabhupada's mentioning here. And so when you are so liberated like that in Krishna consciousness, there's no possible disturbance or possible calamity or anything external that can destroy this relishing of Krishna consciousness. There is no more, you cannot be ruled over anymore by the modes of nature. You cannot be ruled over by eternal time. You cannot be ruled over by karma. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes, Madhavita.
Thank you for the class. My question is, you mentioned something about when the yogis are doing their austerities.
Right.
And that King Indra does not want his position to be taken by these yogis who are doing austerities. So that presupposes that by doing these austerities, the goal is to take the position of Indra, or is that happen as a result of not being completely successful and you get the position of Indra?
Actually, that's in the mind of Indra. But a lot of these yogis, they're not aiming at doing the yoga practice to get the post of Indra.
Okay.
Many of them don't. Some of them do, but like in the case of Hiranyakashipu, that was his aim. But in the other stories of the Bhagavatam that we hear, you see that some yogis, they're just doing, you know, they're just going about doing their yoga thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the mind of Indra, you think, oh, this, you know, that's the anxiety of
right.
Indra himself.
So my question is that you said that they make a trap, he makes a trap for the yogis. So when I think of a trap, I think of bait.
Yeah.
And
that's what it is.
So, but when you go to catch an animal with a trap and you put the bait in, that's based on the idea that the animal is attracted to the bait.
Right.
So, is it a case of that the yogis are not pure and they actually have some desires and therefore the bait
yeah.
grabs them? Or is it just that whatever the bait is so overpowering that they have no choice?
Well, in the stories of the Bhagavatam, usually that bait is a very beautiful woman, as we all know. So, but these yogis, because a lot of the time these yogis are not bhakti yogis. Some of them are very powerful. Take the case of Markandeya Rishi. Markandeya Rishi was so powerful that he was able to survive in his body even after the dissolution of the whole cosmic manifestation. He was that powerful that he was able to retain, because usually when you in these bodies, we are always dependent upon the air, upon the sunlight, you know, on so many things. These bodies are not independent. These bodies are subject, they are part of the environment of the universe. But this yogi was so powerful, Markandeya, that he actually became independent from all the things, and he was able to even witness the dissolution of the whole cosmic manifestation. Now Markandeya, he was trying to be seduced the same way, the same old-fashioned way, you know, bringing beautiful women dancing, and I mean, these are very beautiful women. These are not Miss Universe here. Just like Prabhupada said, if you compare these women to the Miss Universes here on this earth, these women look like frogs. So these women are very beautiful. And not only they are so beautiful, but all the arrangements to entice these yogis are just so suitable for that. But that, most of the time, when they do take the bait, it's because they are not devotees. They are not devotees of Krishna. Because in the mind of a devotee of Krishna, it's like we keep reading and we quote it from Rupa Goswami. I mean, that's nothing. You know, having a woman dangling in front of you, that's really not like a major thing for a devotee. The only thing that can destroy a devotee's determination and Krishna consciousness, the only thing we can think of is pretty much it's just offenses to other devotees. But for the regular yogis, it's the same baits, you know, women or power over others. But most of the time it's women. And that's how, even in the material world, I mean, we see tragic stories. I mean, even in major historical events in this civilization that we're talking about here, or among the Romans, among the Greeks, even in the Mahabharata. Even in the, if you read the Mahabharata, there are so many stories. The same thing as, you know, women can have very powerful effects in clouding the mind of men. That's how it is. That's how, you know, that's how people can do very foolish things. Just like in the Mahabharata, this Jayadratha. Jayadratha wanted to... Jayadratha was present when Draupadi was being distraught in the assembly of kings after, you know, the game of dice. But Jayadratha contemplated the desire to see Draupadi naked. So when the Pandavas and Draupadi were exiled in the forest, he actually went to the forest, Jayadratha, and wanted to insult Draupadi again, to see her naked. And that's one of the reasons why he was killed. So powerful people do foolish things, because they're not devoted to Krishna. Actually, a life without Krishna consciousness is a cursed life. If we are in these stories of the Bhagavatam right now, for the last 2-3 stories, we have seen a lot of cursing and counter-cursing. You know, this king being cursed, that muni cursing another muni, and in this case, you know, this lady cursing this king. But if we think about it, in material life, we all have cursed lives. I mean, what do we have? A material body, which is like Narada Muni said, it's already gone. It's just a matter of time. A polluted mind, distorted intelligence, you know, unhappiness. Nothing lasts in this world. Even if you endeavor for so long, put all your energies into one thing, and are successful to accomplish whatever you're looking for, but you can't hang on to it, because it's going to be gone. So this is pretty much cursed lives. Yes, for me. Can you repeat that in the microphone again?
Aren't devotees exempt from curses? I think if you remember in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this devotee cursed Lord Chaitanya, saying that you're never going to be happy in your household or life. Remember what Lord Chaitanya said?
Well, Prabhupada, actually, this is a story that Pushkar told me once. Prabhupada, I think he was in India. The first few years when Prabhupada returned to India with his disciples. And so some of his disciples were, you know, a couple of devotees, they were in some kind of rasa going on there. They didn't like each other. And so this devotee cursed the other devotee, and then that devotee went to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I got cursed by so-and-so, you know, and this so-and-so was a powerful devotee. And then Prabhupada said, very seriously said, well, if you chant Hare Krishna, it won't act. But if you don't chant Hare Krishna, it will act. It will feel the reaction. So the question of devotees' lives are not cursed, because devotees are dedicated to Krishna. And Prabhupada explains in the prior verse, purport, that Katanga Maharaj, even though he practiced Krishna consciousness at the very last moment of his life, just the very last moment, when the demigods told him, hey, you got 5 minutes to live, he took off. And all he did is engage in Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada said, that very last moment of engagement, that brought him back to Krishna. And then Prabhupada said, imagine if you can practice Krishna consciousness throughout your life. Then Prabhupada said, asamsaya, without any doubt, you're going back to home, back to God. So the devotees do not have cursed lives. But anybody who is not Krishna conscious, that's pretty much a cursed life. Any more comments? Thank you very much. Have a great day, Srila Prabhupada.